Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm joined on the podcast today by Aaron Pringle, author of the new short story collection, Unexpected Weather Events. Writer Tom Noyes wrote about the collection. Aaron Pringle has done it again. In this clutch of grimly gorgeous stories, resilient characters navigate perilous conditions and deteriorating landscapes in their efforts to transcend or at least come to terms with the dicey, mysterious predicament of their strangely familiar lives. The greatest graces afforded these pilgrims, not to mention us readers, are the sentences coldly true and perfectly pitched that pump their blood and afford them breath. Aaron Pringle is not a minimalist, nor is she a language for language's sake lyricist, but her prose, its sound, and its sense is the heart of the book. Aaron, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
If someone hasn't yet heard about your short story collection, Unexpected Weather Events, do you have a favorite story or two from the collection that you can tell us about?
Oh, sure. One of my favorite ones is called Valentine's Day, and it's set on Valentine's Day evening in the nighttime, and it's sort of in the Northwest United States, so it's very snowy, and there are three brothers ranging in age from about 9 to 15, and they're walking through the grocery store because they're out of milk and they're in charge of making dinner because their mother's on her first date since their father died by suicide 6 years previous. And so you get kind of the camaraderie of the brothers, but also the general irritation and the ways that they behave with each other. And also as they're walking, the unfolding of how their lives came to be where they are right now. They had lived previously in the Midwest, or at least somewhere far enough away that the mother moved them to try to make a new start or find some perspective on everything. And so the boys are kind of rattled and disoriented, and now they're not sure what to do with a mother who is now dating. And so it follows them and their sort of hijinks and their and the deep sorrow that lies within all of the boys.
Can you tell us about your process of writing stories? When you sit down to write a short story, have you thought about the story and know exactly the arc of the story or the characters, or do you ever sit down with just the first line of a story? How does that creative process work for you?
So I rarely know where the story is going. So I don't plot that out. Of course, when I tell stories aloud, you know, it's mm-hmm. very, you need to know where you're going if you're telling right. like Little Red Riding Hood, or if you're making up one. But when I'm writing, I think a lot of the pleasure and the experience of writing, and I think the interest that is relayed from my mind to the readers, is that we both don't know where this might go, but we both trust, you know, even though I'm in one time writing it and there's many years later reading it, we both trust that it will end. And so I wish that I used to write very short stories, not flash, but pretty right. short. And now they have increased in length, but so has my interest in the characters themselves and their memories. And as soon as you start dealing with memory within a story, it's very difficult to get out of that story very quickly. And I tend to sit down with an image in my mind, either that I saw or that I've imagined. So for that, the story that I had just sort of summarized, I had mm-hmm. been at the grocery store late one night, and I don't know if it was Valentine's Day or the day after, but it was late, and there were these teenage boys with a grocery cart and behaving really goofy and loud. And I was very grouchy that evening, I guess, because they were just weaving in and out. And no one was at the grocery store, you know, it was very vacant. But I just had this vivid response to, like, come on, you guys. And then I stopped and thought, why can't I have a generous reading of their experience? Like, what terrible things has probably happened in their lives, like has happened in mine, that would give some grace and understanding and to allowing joy and seeing it. So it was that image of just the boys in the grocery cart. And then, yeah. And so I sat down knowing that image had to be in the story and then just trying to move through that.
Have you ever had a short story turn into a novella or even a novel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's happened. and there's several in this collection. The last one, you know, because now I don't. Well, for the most part, I know if it's not going to be a novel. If it starts sounding like a novel, I just stop. because my last novel took 15 to 20 years to write. And so if I start doing that, man, well, I'm never going to finish a thing. But yes, where the story just keeps going because there's more understanding of why the character's the way that he or she is, or because as they have memory, that memory involves other people. And so then there might be some needed explanation, even if that's just describing an object in the house related to the memory of the person. And so I'll let the story go. But if it's, I mean, keep going. But if it starts feeling like a novel, then no. Because I have one that I'm working on right now, and I'm probably in my, I don't know, sixth year working on it. And it's a frustrating process because you have to marry it, right? Like, you have to marry it and know that you were going to stay with it. And I've already committed to this one. So
what was your original writing journey that led you to writing your first stories and then getting them published?
Well, we could go as far back as my mom making little books that I would tell her aloud. but my sister was a writer, and she was 16 years older than me. So I was always very aware of her writing stories and trying to get them published, and her kind of navigating that as a, you know, we lived in a town of 3,000 people and no one did that. No one wrote, I mean, maybe people wrote stories, but no one pursued it. And so then when I was a teenager, I started writing stories more purposefully. And then she would give me her old Writer's Digest. And so I would go through and read about the magazines. And I don't know if it's Writer's Digest, but the one that came out every year, and it was really thick and it had.
Yeah, it was the Writer's Yearbook. It was published by Writer's Digest.
Yeah. And so I just started sending them because also no one was there to tell me that this isn't done. My sister was doing it. And I loved the post office and I loved the whole process of writing a cover letter and, you know, taking it to the mailman and getting stamps. And so, so that's how it really got going. And I thought I was going to be a visual artist. I was very, I spent far more time in the art room. And when I went to college, I took a drawing class and a creative writing class. And in the drawing class, I mean, I did fine, but I really did not enjoy workshop when people would talk about each other's drawings. But in creative writing, I loved it. And I loved people telling me that they liked the images that were in the stories. And then I thought, oh my goodness, this whole time, I have been wanting to paint like total realism, you know, like those beautiful, Rembrandts even further back where you can see the skin tone and it's so spot on. And I'm never going to get there in my painting. But I realized in my writing, all I had to do was write the boy walks through the door. And everyone will imagine a human being, you know, and it will be perfect and it will be completely real. But then I get to do more with it. it's not just stuck within this one time zone of the canvas. And so that's when it just really took off and I became fully focused on writing. I'd always been a reader, of course, because what else do you do in cornfields and bean fields? But that's where it really took off.
Do you remember your first short story acceptance?
Because I think the magazine folded before it came out. I remember that there was something like Drunken Duck when I was 19 or 18. There was an excerpt from the novel I was working on at the time, the first one I'd ever write, and it came out there. And I think that the next story, like a short story, came out in Quarter After Eight out of Ohio State University. And that story was Remember Ella. And I had been living in Chicago at the time. And I wrote that there. So I was 19. Yeah.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta have it wish list. And Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.
Are there short story writers that you admire and may have inspired you along your own path as a writer?
Yes, there's certainly voices that have affirmed that this is the path that I should stay on. Flannery O'Connor, when I discovered her work. And I don't know if it's always that I think of these writers as writers, but I love reading them so much and their view on reality, whether that's in the surreal or in their humor, just makes me want to write back to them, you know, write a story for that they would laugh out regardless of whether they're living or dead. So Flannery O'Connor, Faulkner, not necessarily his stories, but his prose itself. Just the way he moves language teases me greatly. And then Carmen McCullers, who everyone told me to read, but I didn't read her until this summer. And then I read her and thought, oh yeah, this is why. Yes, yes. And how nice to still be discovering, you know, even if people already knew, I didn't know. And Eudora Welty and Carol Shields. Of course, Carmen Maria Machado is a recent, you know, a living writer, and I enjoy her work. And then poetry is another. I live in this strange alley between short story and poetry, where I'm neither poetry, and I would say that most short story writers would say I don't belong with them, because I just live in this dark alley. So as much poetry or poets whose work I admire keeps me going, because the rhythm of the language and the way that it can create is far more interesting to me than telling a story that has a beginning, middle, and end. I never sit down thinking like, man, I want to tell what would happen if, you know, I'm not that person. Like I said, I sit down with, you know, my imagination, and I have an image, or I have a sound of language, and I just want to explore that rhythm or cadence, or get into that sort of mental photograph.
What writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories or novels?
I would say don't do it.
You don't need the competition.
No,
I'm kidding.
No. I would say, if I were to tell my younger self, which I think is probably the most honest I would be, is to when people say things like you can borrow, not steal, or steal, not borrow, whatever it is, from other writers, I don't think that that's an accurate way to talk about it. And since I get so stuck in the what words mean, maybe this is just me, but I think one of the beautiful things about writing is that it's this incredibly long tradition that we as writers get to participate in. And they're in the same way that Eliot in The Wasteland is referencing and bringing in all of these old voices into his current time period and his way of moving through the world. So too do we as writers get to dialogue with those who were writing before us, and who, like Walt Whitman would say, you know, where he casts himself forward into the future and is talking to us. And that seems so beautiful and precious to be able to move through time like that outside of grief and death, that you're just completely welcome. You just feel welcome to start talking back to those writers and to think of future readers that you're talking to. And that all of these voices do exist. Sometimes maybe there is a loneliness if you're not an only child that you're not used to writing. Mm-hmm. But if you start thinking about all of the people who have written before you and for you, and all the writing that you needed to understand your life up to this point and things that will happen to you, then I think you can feel that sort of comfort, not in a sentimental way, but that sort of awareness of others. You know, like I remember when I had my child, I suddenly thought, oh, like I stepped into the tradition of millions of women before me who have done this. Like I've entered into this cultural experience, and I suddenly became aware of them, even though of course that had always been. And I think that's probably the best thing that I could say is, there's no reason to doubt what you're writing or your voice. And you don't even need to think about imagined readers. You've read all of the people that you are writing to. So.
Are you working on more stories now?
Yeah. I've got that novel that creeps in and out of my mindscape. And then, yes, there's several stories that are, one is fully sketched out. Like there's a beginning, you know, like I know how it ends. So I've written it all the way to the end, which is great. But the others are like, I have one that's just the voice of someone telling their story. And that doesn't have an end yet. So I have many beginnings, but I haven't yet sat with the time to fully orchestrate that. So yeah, I do have more stories.
What books, fiction or nonfiction, have you read recently that you enjoyed?
I'm reading Vesper Flights by I think Susan McDonald's her name. I've never read her before, but she's nonfiction and it's essays. And her introduction is so interesting. And she talks about, I'm not even be able to explain it, but she basically talks about this old concept of having a variety of strange objects all put together in the same space, and how that's how she envisioned her essay collection. And she's coming in every angle to discuss the environment, but in super surprising ways. And I love the way that she thinks and following her mind. She's a great, great thinker. And for example, there's one essay where she talks about bird watching in New York City and how you wouldn't think to do that. But at night, on the top, she goes to this top of the skyscraper with this other bird watcher. And she's often like a nature voyeur. So she goes off with different experts and will experience what they already know. But there's so many bird migrations happening up above the city. And so there's certain times of the night that you can see. And so when you start thinking about these ghostly migrations of birds, it's completely fascinating in just ways that you know, it's not the romantic landscape that she is capturing. She's really interesting. And then I'm reading, I got Jack Gilbert's collected poems. So I'm now and then going into that. But those are the two that I'm moving through. Yeah.
Where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you and your writing?
Sure. So my website is my name. So E-R-I-N, Erin, Pringle, Pringle.com. And so that links to all the booksellers or past stories. A lot of the stories you can read online because I originally published them in magazines that are all online. So that's the main thing, ErinPringle.com. And I'm on Facebook with the same name and Twitter or whatever that's being called right now. And Instagram, which I'm still figuring out. And then the publisher of Unexpected Weather Events and my last book, Hazada, I Miss You, is Oust Press. And they're at AWST-Press.com. And so you can learn more about the books there and also the other voices that they're publishing, because they're a very niche, interesting publisher of the strange and beautiful and not often seen.
Again, we've been speaking to Erin Pringle, author of the new short story collection, Unexpected Weather Events. The collection is available now, so go buy a copy. And Erin, thanks for doing this interview.
Oh, thank you so much, Jeff. I really appreciate the time.
Absolutely.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.